One other note on Sleeping Sunday, bring a chair. All right, well, good morning, everybody. Today, I can unveil this. This is a print that was made for United Airlines by Millard Sheets. And I got it at an antique store in town for real cheap. This is our last segment, so far as I know, in the series we've been in, talking about, you know, just like tools for being good neighbors, tools for connection. We've talked about empathy, we've talked about listening and solitude, a little bit about hospitality, kind of as a byproduct of talking about Breck and Kathy, who are truly hospitable. And today's lesson, like all spiritual lessons, I think can only be taught by example and learned by practice, right? So you're not going to leave this morning getting it. And I, having prepared for it this week, also don't fully get it, right? It's something that we have to walk in. And partly because of this, at the end of the service, I think we're going to take a few minutes of just kind of silence, which I like to incorporate sometimes, not to fill time. I've got a lot of material today. I like to incorporate it because we oftentimes don't have true silent times in our lives, right? We're either very busy or we're very good at filling our lives up with noise. Oh, nothing's going on, I guess I'll turn on the TV. Oh, I'm home alone, I'll turn on the radio, right? But sometimes it's good to be together and to practice an intentional silence. So we'll do that at the end of the service. And I believe that if we practice today's topic, that we will be able to practice all the other tools we've discussed, empathy, listening, solitude, hospitality, nonviolent communication, an understanding of our emotions and needs, putting others first as Jesus did. I think we'll be able to practice all those things better because I believe today's topic is the key to loving our neighbor with God's love. So we're going to open with a passage from Ezekiel 36. I know we're going Old Testament today. Ezekiel 36, 26 and 27a. And I will give you a new heart, and a new spirit I will put within you. And I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh, and give you a heart of flesh. And I will put my spirit within you. So the ultimate tool for building genuine, loving connection must be having an open and vulnerable heart, a new heart working in relationship with the Holy Spirit. And this isn't something that we can just like get on our own, right? So remember when we talked about solitude, we said that our minds are either so busy worrying about the future or so busy just replaying the past in an unhealthy way that we have a very hard time being in the present. And that if we want to be present, we have to acknowledge that our minds aren't going to get us there on their own, that we need like spiritual help to actually be here and paying attention. In a similar way, an open, a vulnerable heart isn't something that we just will ourselves to have. This new heart isn't just a realization that all people should be loved, right? Because I think we can all sign off on that. If there's a piece of paper that says, do you think everyone should be loved? I think everyone here would sign it. It's not just that. But this new heart is inherently capable of being hurt. And none of us want to be hurt. And so that's why we need a spiritual surgery, kind of, right? To make us capable of accepting that. So if we look again at that Ezekiel verse, it opens with, I will give you, right? Our new heart comes from God. It's a spiritual gift from God. Later on it says, I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh. And I was struck by how unnatural that is, like a rock in your body. You know, maybe some of you have metal plates, right? Or maybe you've had a kidney stone, but like a rock in your body, that's not a normal thing. But if we're honest, a hard heart is kind of where we naturally tend to go if we're not shown a better way. And we don't need to look too far to understand why, because we have Paul Simon, right, who says, I'm a rock, and a rock feels no pain, right? There's a popular C.S. Lewis quote that pops up on social media all the time. I don't really know why, but it's actually a good quote for this. He says, to love at all is to be vulnerable. Love anything and your heart will be wrung and possibly broken. If you want to make sure of keeping it intact, you must give it to no one, not even an animal. Wrap it carefully round with hobbies and little luxuries. Avoid all entanglements. Lock it up safe in the casket or coffin of your selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. To love is to be vulnerable. So God has more for us than to go through this life unaware of our own spirit, unaware of His spirit, and unaware of the spirits of others. And so God has to give us a living heart. A living heart that can know the love of God and give love and be open. A heart that is vulnerable because it's alive, right? Everything that's alive is vulnerable. And that's because everything that is alive is dependent, right? To be alive is to depend on an infinite number of factors, right? Our own existence is kind of a mystery. And this is true spiritually and physically, right? So maybe it's the most visible when we think of like a baby, right? Because talk about being truly helpless when we come into the world. We can literally do nothing for ourselves. But maybe because of that vulnerability, babies are also maybe loved more than anybody else in the world, right? There's love for who they are. And then all of us, we just depend on the world and others for life. Where does our food come from? Where does our water come from? And if you think, well, back in the day, the pioneers, they were really independent. Well, they were dependent on the water cycle and good weather, right? They're dependent on microorganisms in the soil, all these systems that make growing food possible, that make breathing air, you know? We need plants so we can have air. That's a crazy thing. We're so dependent. And spiritually, I think this is even more true, right? Our spirits are made alive only in contact with the Spirit of God, right? And if our hearts are closed, kind of stone dead, we can't experience the joy of the Lord. And then kind of a third element to this is that as humans, we absolutely need relationship and neighborhood and community. And so we're dependent on others for that because you can't have community by yourself. And vulnerability is really the key to neighboring and to having true community. So we could try to practice community without vulnerability, and there are two options for that. I think the first is that we would invest superficially, and we wouldn't care if people come or go, and basically our community would be like a gym membership, where you can show up if you want to, but I'm not going to notice, right? And if you're going to get stronger, that's on you. And that might look like when someone moves away or stops coming to church, we don't notice it. Or when they share their pain or their joy, we respond with a cliche, or we don't open up and share our pain and joy in turn, right? It's kind of a closed off, it's a surface level attempt at community. The other option is that we might invest in people in such a way that they're not allowed to leave, right? Oh, we believe in community, we believe in Silverton, don't you dare leave here. Don't you dare go to another church. Don't you dare whatever. And on the surface, that really might seem like connection or commitment, but it is in fact an attempt to control people rather than a choice to be vulnerable, right? And that approach works really well in a cult, but it has no place in true community. But the spiritual heart, the new heart that God gives us, models itself after Jesus, right? And so our community, if we're really living out of an open heart and a vulnerable heart, allows us to invest in people regardless of the future. We can't control the future, so give up on that and just invest in who's here, right? Whoever we come in contact with, whether or not they're going to stick around, whether or not they're going to receive it, you know, trusting that even if I offend somebody, I can be forgiven, those sorts of things. So it's modeled after the heart of Jesus. And he made himself dependent at every turn, right? The gospel is full of him being dependent. That's the whole point of God becoming a person, right? First thing in Matthew, he's in the wilderness and he's hungry. Actually, even before that, he's a baby and they're trying to kill him. Jesus is indefensible, right? He spends nights in prayer, depending on God. He meets a Samaritan woman because he says, hey, give me a drink. Even as he's dying, he says, I thirst, right? Even as he's dying, he's dependent on someone's mercy. So he doesn't just make himself dependent, he makes himself vulnerable. He's led like a lamb to his own death. He's perfectly vulnerable, maybe in a way that's beyond what we can achieve, especially naturally. Who can sacrifice their lives for another? That's a huge task, right? That's like the furthest example. And Jesus always goes furthest because he's always ahead of us. And so he's not only led to his death quietly, but it's by the people that he loves, right? It's by the people that he wants to be with. He endures every indignity and pain in order to keep loving us. And then he calls us to that vulnerability. Let's go to Matthew 16. Matthew 16, 24 and 25. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me, for whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. And we read this far removed, but if you were Jesus' disciple, it probably took on a new light when you saw Jesus actually taking his own cross, right? The extent that he was really calling his followers to, and that he calls us to, complete vulnerability. So how do we open our hearts? How do we make ourselves vulnerable? We have to accept something that Vanier calls a consciousness of death, or maybe Bonhoeffer would call the cost of discipleship. We have to accept that all living things die and that we're not exempt from that, right? And I'm not trying to be flippant or morbid. This isn't like we should all want to die or any weird thing. In fact, if that thought is too extreme, sometimes those extreme thoughts are too weird, pull it back and just say that everything that's alive also experiences pain, right? We have to accept that we're going to experience pain and that we're going to cause pain. And this is a little counterintuitive, but it's only kind of in accepting that we can be free of it. Right, so we're gonna talk about that more. In America, we celebrate independence, not dependence. Right, we have Independence Day. But God doesn't bring us independence; God brings us freedom. Right, because we're still dependent on Him, and we're still dependent on so much. He brings us reality that we are in need, and that we need our needs met. God brings us freedom from the isolation and the hopeless loneliness that our independence would leave us with. Right, if we try to be truly independent, how lonely would we be? And God says, I don't want that for you. He frees us not from death, but from the fear of death. God doesn't free us from pain, but from the fear of pain. He gives us freedom to be vulnerable for the sake of the love of God, that we might see it here and now, in the midst of everything, right? Any dark time. In Matthew 11, 28 and 30, Jesus says, come to me, all who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And I think when Jesus says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light, I think that yoke he's talking of, in part, is this reality, right? He says, you are burdened with the fear of, you know that you're not going to live forever. And you know that you might experience pain. He says, come to me. That's a heavy burden. I'll free you from that. And my yoke is just for you to know the reality of things. That you're alive right now. That you get to be alive. And that you get to experience joy. and you have an opportunity to love people, right? Because we can either fear death, and fearing it, fail to really live, spend our lives in anxiety about the future, planning about what's next, planning about, you know, how we can be safe and comfortable forever. Or we can just be here and be alive and be glad that there's dessert in the back and be glad that it's sunny today, right? And that doesn't mean that we don't plan for the future, but we do it in such a way that it doesn't control us, it doesn't rule us and crush us. We can give up that burden and accept that joy can coexist with pain and actually come out of pain. We can accept that life does end with death, but also that even in death, God is with us and that Christ has conquered death, right? So it has no mastery over us. And trusting in the presence and the love of God, we are free to truly live. We can savor the present moment. We can be generous with what we have because we know we're not going to keep it. We don't have to hold on to things. Now, as I was thinking about this week, I realized that practicing vulnerability, really trying to be like Jesus in any way, is a bit like drawing a picture. Right? It's a bit, I like to draw, so this metaphor works for me, and I hope you have all tried to draw at some point in your lives, I trust, right? All growing up, I would sit down with a beautiful white piece of paper and a vision in my mind of how great this drawing could be. And then I would either not start because I didn't know how to start, or I would start and as soon as there was a bad line, crumple it up. I'm the worst. I can't do this. How do you get to be a good artist? I just don't have that gift. Whatever. Toss. I took a drawing class at OSU, and most of what we did in that class really was sketch. Right, we would sketch things. And in sketching, you accept that some, even most of your lines are going to be off. The goal is to be very loose and to do general shapes. You start broad and then you kind of focus in, you narrow it, right? So you accept that most of your lines are going to be kind of bad. They're going to be close, but they're not going to be quite. But you learn that that loose gesturing is the first step towards capturing what you're trying to draw, right? You have to start somewhere. And the place that you have to start is actually kind of wrong, right? You're kind of not doing it right. But it's the only way to get to where you want to be. And then after you've completed your initial sketch, you go back in and you refine your lines, right? You look here and you say, oh, that line was good. I'm going to make it darker, right? I'm going to put a little more pressure on my pencil, or I'm going to switch to a darker pencil, or switch to ink, and make it more permanent. That line's good. This line's not. And I'm going to correct that by drawing a better line here. And if it looks good, then I'm going to make that dark, right? I'm going to kind of fill it in and make it more solid. You emphasize the correct line. And the most important lesson that I learned in that art class was that I can really draw anything, truly anything, if I spend enough time, if I have the patience to keep working at it, to keep looking, to keep correcting, to keep trying again, right? And one other thing, when you're doing a sketch, you don't stop to erase, right? You aren't really allowed to judge your lines, because if you start doing that, you're going to erase everything, and you're back at the start, but your paper's smudgy, right? It's not going to be better. I was hoping Noah Price was going to be here today, but he and I met for coffee a few months back, and he was talking, and I just had he's an artist, so I brought a sketchbook, and I was just drawing his face as he was talking, and I said, okay, now you draw me, and because I know he likes to draw, I just wanted to see what he'd do, and so he's drawing away, and 5 or 6 times, he'd stop and flip his pencil over to get the eraser, but the pencil I gave him didn't have an eraser, and he'd look at me just like, what do I do, I made, you know. I was just like, oh, it doesn't matter. It's a sketch. Just draw a better line. Just leave the ugly one. It's fine. And the result, I brought it here somewhere today, is this great drawing. My eyes are a little buggy, and he's from below me, so the bottom of my face, I'm like a triangle head. But it's great, right? So as we begin to open our hearts to live, to be really alive, vulnerable and full of potential, we have to remember that the possibilities are infinite, right? Because is there a limit to God's love? And we know there's not. So maybe your marriage will improve, maybe your friendships, maybe our relationships with our neighbors and our strangers. The other thing we have to remember is that we're going to make mistakes. And as you're drawing, as you're trying to be open and vulnerable, a line might be crooked. You might be kind of vulnerable, but then pull back. You might be open to share your pain or share your joy, and then hesitate or close off. And you don't get to erase things, right? We don't get to go back and redo things. We don't get to rehab a conversation. But we can have another conversation. We can try again. We can try to be open again. We get to draw a better line. And so actually, I love this print. I love the color, and I love just kind of the material or the subject matter. But if you look closer, you can actually see there's pencil lines from the artist's original sketches. And I love that it shows the process of it. I love that this beautiful painting, you can kind of look through it and see that there was a point where he just was scribbling on the page, trying to find out where things go. So we're going to make mistakes. We won't always be good listeners. We won't always be empathetic when people need us to be empathetic. We might be closed off. We might insult our neighbor when we're trying to be open. And we might be insulted, right? We might try and be open and be hurt by someone. But it's the only way to actually try to love people is to risk that. We might be unforgiving. We might be unforgiven. And that's part of it too. But as we keep at it, sticking with this metaphor of drawing, if we keep at it, we're going to build a testimony to the reality and the presence and the love of God that is uniquely and authentically our own, right? Because all those lines, no one else can draw those. All these opportunities, all these relationships, no one else can have that relationship, can have that opportunity like you do. And errors or not, we're compiling this drawing that says something about what does it mean to be alive? What does it mean to know God? What does it mean to be loved by God? And then all those loose and crooked lines, all the hurts that we suffer and the pain we cause will become marks of growth, right? They say, I used to be fearful or resent my father or have anxiety about change or hate my boss or harbor anger against the spouse or be closed off to love. But now I'm truly alive and I'm truly free, all thanks to the faithfulness of God. On the road to Emmaus, right, Jesus rises from the dead. He appears to some different people. At one point, he's walking with some people on the road to Emmaus, and they're grieving that he's died, and they don't realize it's him who's alive now. And he explains to them why everything had to happen from the scriptures. And then they go in to eat, and he breaks the bread, and they realize it's Jesus, and he disappears. And they say in Luke 24, verse 32, they said to each other, did not our hearts burn within us while he talked to us on the road, while he opened to us the scriptures? I was talking with Dan Fish this week, and he really was emphasizing, he said, you know, John, I don't want us to be just an intellectual church. I want us to be a church that knows, like, the Spirit, right? He really wanted to emphasize, when we talk about any tool for loving our neighbor, it's only through the Holy Spirit. And even in that opening verse from Ezekiel, God says, I'll give you a new heart, but he also says, I'll put my Spirit in you as well, right? We're dependent on the Holy Spirit to do this, to be able to be vulnerable and open, to be able to heal. So I thought it'd be good to take a few minutes of silence. And in this, you can reflect, you can listen, you can do whatever you want. That's the great thing about silence. No one can dictate it. I can't tell you what to do in your heart, right? But I suggest that you can say to God, I'm open to you. I want to be alive and vulnerable. Or you can say, I want to be open. I want to be vulnerable. You can say, I'm scared. You can say, I can't, right? There's no total honesty with God. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I'm going to pray real quick, and then we'll just be silent for a few minutes. So God, we just want to thank you that you, in making yourself known to us, also made yourself vulnerable to us, and that in choosing to love your creation, you opened yourself to also be hurt by that creation, but that you showed us that that love is really worth it. And we just ask that you would teach us to be practitioners of your openness and vulnerability. So God, let us grow in vulnerability and openness. May we be blessed just in growing in all the good things that you have for us. In your name, amen.